Welcome to the Kingpins podcast, Denim Talks, the place where we talk about all things denim. I'm fashion journalist Allison Nieder.
And I'm Erin Barajas, director of communications for Kingpins.
Erin and I were in New York for the Kingpin show, and we had a chance to sit down and talk to several people in the industry, and we'll be rolling out some of those interviews in the coming months.
On the Kingpin show floor, you will find literally a who's who of the denim industry. You'll find really influential designers and retailers, to name drop a few. There's like the godfather of denim, Adriano Goldschmied himself, Sanjeev Ball, who has, through his company Cytex, basically redefined what a denim factory can look like. You'll have global and international retailers, and also really small boutique influential retailers, as well as designer brands. So everybody.
At the New York show, we bumped into Paul Gez, who really was at the forefront of designer denim in the 1970s. And we knew that he would have great stories to tell about the very beginnings, about the launch of Sassoon Jeans in the 1970s and the heyday of fashion licensing in the 1980s. Do me a favor, just say your name.
My name is Paul Gez.
Excellent. I'm here with denim industry icon Paul Gez, and we are going to talk about the roots of the premium denim and designer denim industry. So welcome, Paul. Tell me, how did you get into the denim industry?
That's a very long story. I started my involvement in the denim industry in France. Mm-hmm. In December 1975, I came to America to find denim because nobody was getting any more denim. The only place in the world that was doing denim at that time is the U.S. And Cole Mills got a huge contract from Levi's and all the other factories, and they were not so interested to ship, you know, Europe. Or mm-hmm. So I came here to buy denim for Europe and to make my jeans for the European market. And I met Maurice Sassoon, who introduced me to the Sassoon Jeans Company. And we made a partnership, and a lot of very funny stories happened, you know. He was making like cuts of 60 pieces or 100 pieces or 200 pieces. At that time, the jeans were selling at $36 retail, when Levi's was selling at $9.99.
Right. So he'd already established a higher price point.
We were like a French cut jean made in America that was half of the price of all the important jeans from France and Europe. So we started, you know, to develop that idea and producing jeans in El Paso, Texas, with Jim Viola. And we put jeans all over New York around Bloomingdale's. And Bloomingdale's was not buying the Sassoon jeans. He went to Bloomingdale and he told them, listen, we are selling a lot of jeans all around you. Like, they told me, listen, we will carry your jean if you buy one page on the New York Times to announce it. So sure. So we bought the page and they took 2,400 units. I think they sold on the weekend something like 2,100.
What was the price?
$36.99. So they called and they said, you don't need to advertise for us anymore. We want your jeans. And we started doing like a huge business with them. And obviously when Bloomingdale's buys something, everyone, other department stores were doing the same thing. And we were very, very, very successful. The only department store that did not buy at that time was Macy's. And I end up calling the president of Macy's, and I went to see him with my factor papers showing how much we were shipping every month. I told him, how can you not buy our jean? We are selling $150,000 a month to Bloomingdale every month. And I showed it to him. And Saks and Lord & Taylor and Abraham & Strauss, Bambergers. So I go, I meet them. I showed them the numbers, and Art Reiner, who was the president of the store at that time, said to Claire Sikorka, that's the buyer name, listen, this guy is going to be your best friend. Take him to your office, place an order, and let's see what happens. So she takes me to her office. She looks at me. She wanted to kill me because we called her before and she didn't want to buy anything. So I called the president and he made like a huge meeting with everybody and he obliged her to buy, basically. So I told her, listen, I'm going to make your life very easy. I'm going to place the order for you and everything that is selling, we will ship you again. Anything that you don't sell, we'll take back. Cannot beat this deal, right? So she did. And we did become the best friend because the next Monday she was calling me to reorder. So it was really well established as a French jean made in USA. Then I had the visit of three guys, one from NBC, CBS, and ABC, coming to see me at the same time. And they said, we made a study that if you advertise your jeans on TV, you double your numbers.
Okay.
I said, are you kidding me? I said, yeah, you try it. I said, I try it. How much does it cost? $1 million. I said, are you kidding me? At that time, I mean, it was ridiculous. $1 million. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I did not sleep, you know, and I've been thinking about what they were saying. And I said, so what happened if you don't double? One of them said, don't pay.
Wow.
We did the advertising on TV, and actually you can see still now, 35 years later, you can see now the commercial on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You put Sassoon Jeans commercial, and all those commercials, they come out.
I remember it. I remember the New York Rangers commercial.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah.
That was the first commercial. Mm-hmm. We did the commercial with the Rangers, and we got them to sing Ooh La La Sassoon mm-hmm. on the ice. And you have no idea what happened after that. I mean, we did double the numbers. Mm-hmm. We were shipping $22.5 million a month at that time. It went to $5 million. So we did a lot of different commercials with a lot of different athletes because I love, you know, boxing. Mm-hmm. And we did one with Lou Piniella. Mm-hmm. We did one with Joe Montana. Then we did one with Elton John in 1984. And that was awesome because he took a song that he wrote for his record that was called Sad Song. And he took Sad Song and made it to Sasson. And that was really a huge, huge success. Then after that, you know, everybody else started copying us. Gloria Vanderbilt came and, you know, she did like a Missy Jean. Mm-hmm. And Calvin Klein did exactly the same thing. And Jordache came with his advertising on TV like us. And we really created an industry. Mm-hmm. When you think about it now, how many new jean company were created since the Sassoon days? Mm-hmm. It's like crazy.
Before sales took off at Bloomingdale's, what was the reluctance? Was it the price point? Was it devoting that much floor space to denim?
Price was a big issue. Mm-hmm. Then the fit was really tight. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time, I don't know if you know or not, but the girls, they had to lay down on the floor to zip.
Right.
You know? Unbelievable.
This is pre-stretch days.
Yes. Pre-stretch days and pre-understanding of any European of the American fit, mm-hmm. which is the American woman, like the German woman. Mm-hmm. They are healthy, you know, they have nice thighs, mm-hmm. big butt, you know, and a very small waist. So we had to change the patterns mm-hmm. to really...
For the American fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was it like in France at the time? Did denim in the U.S. mirror what was happening in France, or were they two totally different animals?
Very slow. Europe is very slow. But, you know, some companies in Europe were doing very well, like Diesel and Replay.
So it was a really important time.
Very important time. The advertising also was very, very important.
It's an interesting idea. And I do remember in the 1980s, all the denim brands that advertised on right. TV, yeah. it was a common occurrence.
I can't even imagine it now.
They were all trying to top each other, like the Brooke Shields Calvin Klein commercial or the Guess commercial that mirrored James Dean and Giant or the Bugle Boy commercials, like one after another. They were just constantly trying to one-up each other. So it was a really fun time in the industry. At that time, you were in New York?
Yes. We were producing in El Paso, Texas.
And they could handle the demand as it took off?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you were able to keep your same factories and just expand
yeah.
production. And then you ended up in L.A.
Yes. Then we opened our own factory in L.A. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that became so important is that one day I had a visit of somebody called Leo Gore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was the father of Leslie Gore. Mm-hmm. And he has a licensing company. So one day he comes to see me, he says, listen, I have a great deal for you. Do you want the brand of Oscar de la Renta to make jeans? I say, are you kidding me? I am the jean guy. Why should I take his name and make him famous on jeans? He said, no, 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 you don't understand. I mean, that could be a big thing. And he was right. I was wrong. I didn't know. But I told him, I said, listen, I make a deal with you. We are going to walk in 10 streets and we are going to ask people who they know better, Sassoon or Oscar de la Renta. Mm-hmm. And we beat him, I think, 8-2. So the deal was, I told him, listen, I'm going to make this deal with you. If you win, I take your license. If I win, you come work for me. And I won. Oh. And he came. And we had, like, in a very short period of time, probably 1 year, over 160 licenses mm-hmm. in the world.
Wow. Doing all kinds of things.
Everything. Luggage, shoes.
All for Sassoon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Maternity. I mean.
So you never did the Oscar de la Renta jean?
No.
That's why I don't remember.
No, we didn't.
So that's
it was a wonderful time.
Time of a huge change. And I also remember the license deals. It was sort of the Wild West of licensing in terms of what you could expand the brand to. Interesting. Have you ever seen a time like that since? Maybe the premium denim boom of the late 90s, early 2000s?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was a rare time.
I wish we had much more time because some of the stories about all the coincidences that happened with the jean business for me mm-hmm. were like mind-boggling.
You have to write your memoir. We're going to write it right here.
Yeah.
Well, we are in LA, so.
We are both in LA.
You could think of a few perfect stories and we can come to you. I would love to hear these stories.
Me too.
We want a nice catalog of all of these sort of seminal stories of how the industry was established, how it's evolved.
It was really something.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul Geddes. For photos and videos, please visit kingpinshow.com.
For industry insiders or denim fans, we've got trends, we've got news, we've got more podcasts. Plus, you'll find more information about Kingpin shows in New York, Amsterdam, Hong Kong, and China.
Thanks for listening.